Well, welcome everyone here this morning. I was just going through 1st and 2nd Kings last while myself, so I decided just to study a little bit on a couple of kings that really stood out to me. So I'm going to be looking at King Hezekiah. Primarily, I suppose, as well as a little bit his father, what he was like, and then what his son was like. And what kind of brought me to that is, in looking at him, Hezekiah seemed to have done a major turn from what the kings of Judah had been doing. He seemed to seek the Lord. Well, verse 2 of 2 Kings 18, we're going to be looking at 2 Kings 18. Verse 3 says, he did what was right in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father David had done. So that's some of the highest recommendation that kings got, and he seemed to it was a real contrast with the kings that had come before him. And then his son, when he took over, and I think they would have reigned together for a little bit, his son discarded all that. And he became the wickedest king of Judah up until that point. So I was kind of looking at that, and I was wondering what went wrong. Why didn't his son follow? So we would like to think that, you know, if we serve the Lord with all our hearts, and our children can see that, that they will follow after that. So that's kind of what I'd like to be looking for in particular in studying these three kings. It's going to be Hezekiah, his son Manasseh, and we have probably more history on Hezekiah than what we have on most of the other kings as well. I'm going to read just a little bit first of all about just a few verses that pretty much, I think, sum up the reign of his father. 2 Kings 16. King Ahaz. 2 Kings 16, I'm going to read verse 3 and 4. It says, but he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. Indeed, he made his son pass through the fire according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel. He sacrificed and burnt incense on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree. And then the real focal point in, I think, in his that showed where he stood in relation to God, we can read in Isaiah. I'm just going to read just a couple verses in Isaiah, chapter 7. Verses 10 to 12. It says, moreover, the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, ask for a sign for yourself from the Lord your God. Ask it either in the depth or in the height above. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord. There, the context of that is Isaiah had been sent out to to let Ahaz know that the armies coming against him, which I think was Syria and Israel, the northern tribes, They were coming out against him, and they were a powerful force that he didn't really stand much chance against in natural. But Isaiah was sent to tell him that they wouldn't conquer him. God was going to save them. And God was offering him a sign, but Ahaz at this point had decided that he didn't want God's help. He was putting his trust in the idols. Yeah, I believe they were under attack right then. It was Syria and Israel. So just to follow through with that story a little bit, I'm going to skip back to 2 Kings 16 again. And verse 7 and 8, it says, "And so Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, 'I am your servant and your son. Come up and save me from the hand of the king of Syria and from the hand of the king of Israel, who rise up against me.' And Ahaz took the silver and gold that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasure of the king's house and sent it as a present to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria heeded him, for the king of Assyria went up against Damascus and took it and carried away people captive to Kir and killed Rezin." So the Lord still allowed him to be delivered by that king of Assyria. But in asking the king of Assyria to come help him, he called himself a servant and the son of the king of Assyria. So he was putting himself under Assyria's leadership at that point. He was basically taking Assyria's gods as his own, which becomes very clear on down in that chapter. After that, he went to meet the king of Assyria, in verse 10. He saw an altar that was at Damascus, and King Ahaz sent a message back to the priest back in Jerusalem, I guess, and had the priest build an altar according to the measurements and the design of that one. And he came back after that then and offered sacrifices on it himself. So he was putting himself under the rule of that king, but not only that king, but their gods as well. So we're going to skip around a little bit in following this story. I'm going to read some in 2 Kings here and some in 2 Chronicles. Both those bring out some little bit different points about Hezekiah. So I'm going to read through some of that, and then I would like if we could discuss some things that we can see in his life or reasons that his son turned so against the Lord again. I think the Bible talks like he was uh, He did things, I think it says he did some things worse than the heathen who had been in Canaan who the Lord cast out. So 2 Kings 18, starting at verse 1, says, "Now it came to pass in the third year of Hoshea, the son of Elah, king of Israel, that Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Abi, the daughter of Zechariah. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father David had done. He removed the high places and broke the sacred pillars. He cut down the wooden image and broke in pieces the bronze serpent that Moses had made. For until those days, the children of Israel burned incense to it and called it Nehushtan. He trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among all the kings of Judah, nor who were before him. For he held fast to the Lord. He did not depart from following him, but kept his commandments, which the Lord had commanded Moses. The Lord was with him. He prospered wheresoever he went, and he rebelled against the king of Assyria and did not serve him. He subdued the Philistines. And it was in the fourth year of King of Hezekiah, verse 9, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, the son of Elah, king of Israel, that Salmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. And at the end of 3 years, they took it. In the sixth year of Hezekiah, that is the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel, Samaria was taken. And then verse 13 says, it was the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. And then we go into a whole story there, but I would like to skip over to 2 Chronicles for a bit. It gives us some more details on the very beginning of Hezekiah's reign. And there's a lot there that we won't read, but it's 2 Chronicles 29. And it focuses on what Hezekiah did in getting rid of the idolatry and in getting back to following the way that God had set up for them to serve him. So most of chapter 29 is about that. It says in verse 2 says, "He did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father David had done. In the first year of his reign, in the first month, he opened the doors of the house of the Lord and repaired them. Then he brought in the priests and the Levites, and he sanctified them and cleansed the priesthood, got it running again. They cleaned out the temple, verses 16 through 18, talks about that a bit. And then he supplied a vast number of animals for sacrifices. Then in chapter 30, he sent people out to all Israel and Judah, telling them that they should come keep the Passover. Up until this time, I think, since the split of Israel and Judah, Israel made a real point of not allowing their people to come back to Jerusalem to worship. So the this would have been before Israel was captured and taken away again. And that king, I don't have the verse for it, but I found it interesting that God said about that wicked king that was in power at the time when Israel was taken captive, that he was not, it said he was wicked, but he not as wicked as some before him. And it seems like that might have maybe relates to the fact that he did allow his people to go back to Jerusalem at that point. He would have been the first one to do that, I think. But it does say that most of the people from the north, from Israel, let's see if I can find the verse where it says it, but it says that most of them just mocked the people that came around inviting them to come down, but it says if, okay, that's verse 10. The runners passed from city to city through the country of Ephraim and Manasseh as far as Zebulun, but they laughed at them and mocked them. Nevertheless, some from Asher, Manasseh, and Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. So early in his reign, he turned back to God. And it was a complete heartfelt thing on his part. He broke out from under that Assyrian leadership that his father had put Judah under, which was a part of getting away from the idolatry and turning back to God. And God had a lot of good things to say to him about him. But there is one instance. It's kind of listed at the end in both 2 Chronicles and 2 Kings, but it's where he got sick. And I think there might be some keys in there. 2 Chronicles, I think I'll read out of Kings. 2 Kings chapter 20. It says, in those days Hezekiah was sick and near death, and Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, went to him and said to him, thus saith the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Then Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed to the Lord, saying, remember now, O Lord, I pray, how I have walked before you in truth and with a loyal heart, and have done that which was good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept bitterly. So here it seems like Hezekiah was puzzled. He was brokenhearted about his life ending this soon. In the mindset of the people back in this time, a long life meant that the gods were pleased with them. And shortened life generally meant that they hadn't lived the way they should have. So it seems like Hezekiah was brokenhearted about that. We don't actually find him asking the Lord to heal him. He just expresses his distress that he had walked in a wholehearted way before God. And he was probably perplexed as to why he was being struck down before he had even reached 40. He had thought that he had been doing God's will, even though it probably often put him against his advisors and the priests and the citizens who were obviously into a lot of idolatry. And now it seemed to him as if it was he had been fooling himself and he didn't know what he had done wrong. But then the Lord spoke to Isaiah and told him to turn back, and he had a different message for him. He was to tell him, I have heard your prayer, I have seen your tears, surely I will heal you. On the third day you shall go up to the house of the Lord. I will add to your days 15 years. I will deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria. And I will defend this city for my own sake and for the sake of my servant David. So here, one question I had. What changed God's mind? Did God change his mind? I'm not totally sure what the answer is to that myself. If somebody has a thought on that, I'd be glad to hear. But we do see a real contrast with what happens next here. Contrast with Hezekiah and Ahaz, his father, where Isaiah says, well, Hezekiah asked for a sign, whereas Ahaz refused a sign when God offered it to him. And he asked for the sundial to go back 10 degrees, and it did. And it seems like soon after that, that the king and a group of his men from Babylon came. They'd heard about his sickness, it says, and they came to see him. And in that, then Hezekiah seemed open to doing a lot like his father Ahaz had done. He didn't put himself under another kingdom, but he went along with them into a partnership instead of a vassal state where he would have been under their influence. But he did go into a partnership, which was against what God had told them to do. But it seemed like he was really glad to have someone that important come to him and want to see what he was doing. There's in the wording, it seems like there might have been some interest in the sign that had happened to him, as well as a partnership, because the Assyrians were so powerful that they were a real threat in that area to everyone. So 2 Chronicles again brings it out. 2 Chronicles 32, 25 and 26 says, but Hezekiah did not respond according to the favor done to him. And that's speaking about the Lord healing him, I think. His heart became haughty, so wrath came upon him and upon Judah and Jerusalem. Then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So the wrath of God did not fall upon them in the days of Hezekiah. I'm just going to pick out a few other highlights of his life. I'm going to, and then look a wee bit at his son, and then I'd like to leave time for some thoughts on why things went the way they did. Again, some verses that spoke very well of him in 2 Chronicles. It says, Hezekiah did throughout all Judah, and he did what was good and right and true before the Lord his God, and in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, in the law, and in the commandment to seek his God, he did it with all his heart, so he prospered. I don't think I'll read a lot, but another question that you can be thinking about is there where it says, Hezekiah did not repay according to the favor shown him, for his heart was lifted up. Therefore, wrath was looming over him and over Judah and Jerusalem. But it says, then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So the wrath of God did not come upon them in the days of Hezekiah. What in his life was that humbling? Where did he humble himself? Then I'm going to read just a little about Manasseh. Chapter 33 in 2 Chronicles. Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king. He reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. He rebuilt the high places which Hezekiah's father had broken down. He raised up altars for the Baals. He made wooden images. He worshipped all the hosts of heaven and served them. He built also altars in the house of the Lord, which the Lord had said, in Jerusalem shall my name be forever. He built altars for the hosts of heaven in two courts of the house of the Lord. He caused his sons to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. He practiced soothsaying and used witchcraft and sorcery. He consulted mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. And that verse kind of gives the impression that some of what he did was to provoke the Lord. He did it because he knew it was wrong. He knew it was against the Lord. But he had again turned so completely to idolatry, to other gods, false gods, that he is just like he was standing up in the face of God. It says he even set a carved image, the idol that he had made in the house of God, of which God had said to David and Solomon his son, in this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, I will put my name forever. I will not again remove the foot of Israel from the land which I have appointed for your fathers, only if they are careful to do all that I have commanded them, according to the whole law and the statutes and the ordinances of the hand of Moses. So Manasseh seduced Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. So again, just to kind of sum up what I'm looking for, in seeing the contrast of Hezekiah to the kings previous, the way he seemed to totally turn toward God with his whole heart, and he tried to serve God completely. And then, just using the dates when the kings reigned, it would appear like Manasseh, it says he was 12 years old when he became king. But it would seem like there, Manasseh and Hezekiah would have overlapped about 10 years, maybe. So we think that happened with some of the other kings. They pretty much did that just to make sure that they had a replacement king set in place who they wanted. So they would have been kind of co-ruling together. So Manasseh would have been 22 years old when he took over by himself, and he again turned so completely against God to the point where he seemed to shake his fist in God's face almost, prove that he didn't want God. He wanted the heathen gods from around him. And I was trying to find some things in Hezekiah's life that possibly could have influenced Manasseh to be the way he was. I think Hezekiah is kind of a standout, because, well, God in his mercy raised up a good king to try to bring Judah back. But, if anyone would have any thoughts on that, just raise your hand and we'll get a mic to you. I was going to send a text around, but I didn't know how to word my questions and just never got it done in time. So you have time to think about it. But.
I'm just wanting to catch up on your question. Was your question something in Hezekiah's life that would explain Manasseh's decision in life, maybe?
Yes.
I've got quite a few verses underlined in my Bible of things that Hezekiah did, and I'm in 2 Chronicles. In the first month of his reign, the first thing that Hezekiah did was he opened the doors of the house of the Lord and repaired them. And do you know offhand how many years Hezekiah reigned? And was how many years of overlap
was in? I think he reigned 29 years.
I don't know. This was just a quick thought after you asked that question. In Hezekiah did so many things the way God wanted him to, and all the things that he repaired and he sanctified and he appointed singers and to worship the Lord, and then that thing happened with Sennacherib, and it seemed like there's a brief time, and maybe that was the time when Manasseh was at a crucial state in his life. He was only 12 years old when he began to reign, and it says Hezekiah in verse 27 of 2 Chronicles 33, and Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor, and he made himself made himself treasures for silver and for gold. And maybe that was right at the time when Manasseh needed Hezekiah the most. I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know how much. I was trying to find out a time frame and of when that happened. But you see, people brought many gifts to Hezekiah, and maybe he got sick. Maybe Manasseh saw all this, and you've seen that in history, where if a father is taken up with other people bringing him things, and his very son might get a huge distaste for the very things that God was blessing his father for. But Manasseh might have said, who am I, right? Mm-hmm. And he didn't make wise choices, but maybe that was a downfall.
Thank you. Yeah, I think those verses there are probably a key. If you just keep reading down through there, you start at verse 27. It lists some things he did and some of the riches he acquired. And then verse 31 says, but when the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon were sent to him to inquire about the wonder that had happened in the land, God left him alone to test him so that he could know what was in his heart. And I think from what I could figure out on the timing, this commentaries would, all that I saw would agree that this would have happened just well, that his sickness was probably just before this in his healing, and then these ambassadors came to see him. I think it says that in 2 Kings that they heard he had been sick and they came to visit him. And I think it was right shortly after that that the King Sennacherib came up against him. So it seems that in acquiring all those riches and honor, and then in being healed, it was almost like his reaction to all that in a way can surprise us, and in a way it's kind of familiar. But rather than seeing his own weakness, his mortality, and how fragile he was, how his life was all in God's hands, he became kind of strong in himself. He felt invincible. And he kind of turned from a gratitude that he expressed to God into more of an arrogance and a pride in his life. He almost took God's love and mercy for him as seeing God's favor on him, that he could kind of live as he pleased almost. He was almost above God's laws to a degree. And then I think maybe the king coming against them there is what it's speaking of in Second Chronicles, where it says, "Then Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem." I'm not sure about the age of Manasseh at that point. Some of what I read would have indicated that he hadn't even been born yet. But some dates that I saw, is a mic here for George? Some of the dates I saw would have indicated he would have been fairly young. So I'm not sure if he was born or if he wasn't at that point.
Different times when I've looked at this story, the one thing that stood out to me in 2 Kings was that the name of Hezekiah's mother was mentioned. I think right after it said which way his reign went. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, I don't know the history or what type of a person Hezekiah married. But if you look at 2 Kings 21, verse 1, the last sentence in the verse says, "And his mother was," whatever her name was there. And then it says that he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. And I'm just, I don't know what she was like, and I don't know if we should blame her, but I don't know if that would have anything to do with it.
Okay, thank you. I had looked at that just a wee bit, and I didn't really come to any conclusion. It didn't, like, I'd noticed it had said that on a few of the kings, who their mother was. And I had looked a bit about the one that listed for Hezekiah, and there didn't seem to be any real solid information on who that really was. I had said, didn't check that out on Manasseh. But we know that sometimes like Manasseh could have seen, it's pretty obvious from how easy it was for the people to turn back to idolatry to the extent they did under him, that the people hadn't, in general, the people of Judah didn't really have the change of heart that Hezekiah did. So I think part of it, like something that does come out in the Bible, is that the people will get the kind of leadership that they want. God will give them that. And in general, I think the people were still idolaters at heart, even though they had kind of been forced into reform. But also, Manasseh, and seeing, you know, some of those things, if he did see the way that his father responded to some of his riches and his healing and stuff, and the the way that the people were, he could have thought that the institution serving God isn't working, and often people can get turned off in seeing church life not working out the way it should be and that kind of thing, and they tend to, instead of seeing it entirely as the fault of the people not following God's ways, they tend to turn away from God. For some reason, they think that it's not working to serve God, whereas really it's not working because people aren't doing it God's way. I don't know if some of that may be figured in too, but I did want to look a bit at something that Kings doesn't bring out at all about Manasseh's life, but 2 Chronicles does. I'm in Isaiah. 2 Chronicles chapter 33. It's starting verse 10. It says, "The Lord spoke to Manasseh and his people, but they would not listen. Therefore the Lord brought upon them the captains of the army of the king of Assyria, who took Manasseh with hooks and bound him with bronze fetters and carried him off to Babylon. And when he was in affliction, he implored the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers and prayed to him, and he received his entreaty, heard his supplication, and brought him back to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. After this, he built a wall outside the city of David on the west side of Gihon in the valley as far as the entrance of the fish gate, and it enclosed Ophel, and he raised it to a great height. Then he put military captains in all the fortified cities of Judah. He took away the foreign gods, the idol from the house of the Lord, and all the altars that he had built in the mount of the house of the Lord and in Jerusalem, and he cast them out of the city. He also repaired the altar of the Lord, sacrificed peace offerings and thank offerings on it, and commanded Judah to serve the Lord God of Israel. Nevertheless, the people still sacrificed on the high places, but only to the Lord their God." So we see that even though he did turn his back completely on God for most of his reign, when God sent real hard times, he still didn't know where to turn. And I think that would have been because of the life of his father. And just that part of his life, again, offers us real hope, because we can see that even though he was one of the most wicked kings up to that point, that he still was able to turn to God. God still accepted him when he humbled himself and repented. And he again forced the people to worship God. But he did what almost all the other kings did. I think it was only Hezekiah and then later on Josiah that got rid of all the high places that the people offered sacrifices to God, which would have been... it usually refers to that as the, in other places, as the, I can't think of the term it uses now, but it's what Jeroboam had set up for the Israelites when he didn't want them to go back to Jerusalem to worship. He had made the golden calves to represent God. It was still supposed to be worshiping God, but it was idols that represented God, and not worshiping in the way that God had wanted them to. Are there any other thoughts regarding this. Okay, well, thanks for your thoughts.